Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
Again? I asked for no misogyny this time.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.
I put my order in, Cyrus, and I specifically said no misogyny.
Well, that sounds very, what's the word? Gender phobic of you.
I don't even know.
I can't keep up.
I don't even know.
I give up.
The world is changing too fast to keep up with it, at least if you're looking at TikTok. Welcome back. 888-914-9149. Everybody's welcome here. Everybody is welcome. 888-914-9149. Check it out, Cyrus. And this is for real. This is not a joke. This is from the Sun. It's a kind of tabloidish British newspaper, but sometimes they come up with some interesting things, like the old saying.
You can tell how bad a newspaper is by what kind of ads are on the homepage.
True. That is true. What's the old saying? Even a blind hog can find an acorn now and then.
They do have some interesting news every now and then.
Well, check this out. If you've got old Apple gadgets cluttering up your home, you could be sitting on a fortune. Because these retro phones, man, I wish I had kept mine. I seriously wish I had kept them. Some aging iPhones, iPods. Ooh, I just thought about that. I have at least one, maybe two iPods that are probably 10, 12 years old. I know what I'm doing when the show's over. Seriously, listen to that.
Patrick's doing the shows from the Bahamas tomorrow, folks.
I thought of this. So here's the thing. First generation iPhones, for example, are now worth as much as $24,000 on eBay. The original iPod Classic.
Get out launched, of here.
Seriously. The original iPod Classic. As Annie Lennox would say, Cyrus, would I lie to you? I wouldn't lie to you. Annie Lennox might lie to you, but I wouldn't lie to you. The 2001 original iPod Classic. I've got one of those. Now the whole thing is I've got to figure out where I've got to find it. That is selling for $48,796.
No way. This is fake news.
I know what I'm doing after the show. I'm going to be rummaging. And I'm going to look for that iPod Classic. I think I might have two of them. Even newer models of used iPods go for thousands of dollars. A study on the pricing of Apple products on resale sites.
That is an expensive paperweight.
Well, for the person who buys it, maybe. But I'll be laughing all the way to the bank. Mr. Madrid, would you accept $48,796 for that classic iPod? Yes.
Yeah, you don't even have to finish your sentence. Yes.
Yes. Venmo me. Oh, yeah. I would be on Venmo so fast. Okay, so let's continue. Researchers showed that classic iPods in their original packaging were priced at collectibles levels. They noted that one fourth generation red and black special edition released in partnership with the band U2 sold for $90,000. And it goes on and on in that vein. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just to say, I mean, it may be, I mean, like old PlayStations, old Sega systems, especially if there's packaging. Now, most of the time, people don't even think to keep the packaging.
Oh, mint and package. Yep.
But if you still had the packaging, you could indeed make some, you could make some serious money that way. So I'm not joking. I'm going to go find that old iPod, and I'll see what I can fetch for it.
I cannot wait to hear how this goes for you.
I will report back to you. And by the way, Cyrus, I want to make a commitment to you publicly. When I make my first $1 million, I'm going to send you a fruit basket.
All right. I'm not going to hold my breath.
All right. Let's make some hay while the sun shines. Let's go to David in Bettendorf, Iowa. Hi, David.
Hi, Patrick. I was listening this morning, early this morning, when you had the TikTok YouTube videos, the Chad guy and clap your hands gal. And I was thinking, in just from my reflection and some of the things I've read from Father Spitzer about the longing that we have in the world right now, not probably always, but for the transcendent. And I was thinking that the people that are really caught up in this gender ideology are maybe this is an indicator of how of them longing for the transcendent, because you know we know that the body has gender. Mm-hmm. But God as God doesn't have gender, and the angels don't have gender.
Right.
I do have a question of whether the soul has a gender, but it seems like they're longing for this you know, this transcendent, and it's why they're so I don't know, so willing to maybe abandon.
That's
the
an
obvious
interesting
reason.
That's an interesting conjecture. Yeah, why don't we start with the question that you just asked about human souls? So in the case of God, you're right, God is neither male nor female. Angels are neither male nor female. They're pure spirits in the case of angels. And of course, God is the ultimate pure spirits. But human beings are not pure spirits. We obviously are a combination of body and spirit. And the answer to your question, do human souls, independent of the body, do they have gender? The answer is a resounding yes, for this reason, that your soul is the form of your body. And what that means is that your soul, it organizes and animates your body as a body that is gendered. So you are a male, and I'm assuming your gender just on the basis of how you sound on the radio. I think I have a pretty safe bet in doing that. So your gender is integral to who you are, not merely what you are. So as human beings, since we're not, as the Sting album in the Sting song put it, we're not in soul cages. Your body is not a cage that your soul is in that's trying to get free from. Your body is animated and organized by your soul. And so this is why the church teaches that the soul is the form of the body. Now, that's an Aristotelian thought category, but it's true, and St. Thomas Aquinas really developed this. So what that means is your soul is male, and your wife's soul is female, because that's you. And you, in your soul and your body, which is also clearly denominatable, if that's a term, as male or female, the two go together as a single unit, not one or the other, but both together. So unlike the angels, who are neither male nor female, and God, of course, who is neither male nor female, we human beings are integrally male and female, or male or female, and the soul shares in that characteristic as well. So from that standpoint, then we could say that perhaps another way to look at what you're seeing, their desire for the transcendent. I agree. I think all of us, I mean, it's not that I think so. I know that we are all seeking happiness and fulfillment. Even the worst sinners are seeking happiness and fulfillment. They're just looking in the wrong places, and they're making use of the wrong things to try to achieve that happiness and fulfillment. And none of us will ever be truly happy and fulfilled in this life. The classic line from St. Augustine in his Confessions is that our hearts are restless, O Lord, until they rest in Thee. And so our ultimate transcendent fulfillment will never be, and it never could be, that we escape from the reality of who we are as God created us. The ultimate transcendent bliss is going to be when we fully embrace and are fully realized as who we are created by Almighty God, as male and female. Now, it's not reducible like to primarily when you embrace your sex. That's really sort of secondary or tertiary. The thing is, who did God make you to be as you? And He made you as you, as either male or female. So the ultimate transcendence is to become completely who you are in the Lord, in God, in union with Him. That is the ultimate transcendence. So I would say, if I could tweak your theory just a little bit, David, I would say that rather than this be, in the case of the people on TikTok who are just spouting all this craziness, I don't see it so much as them yearning for transcendence as them having a notion that was common, let's say, in the Gnostic heresy, that your body is, in a certain sense, bad. Because now they're not thinking in terms of like sin or virtue, I don't think. But this little sliver of Gnosticism seems to run through all this, because in the Gnostic heresy, one of the hallmarks of it was this dualism, that your body and your soul were two totally separate things, and you're kind of stuck in your body, and matter and material things in general, including bodies, they were bad because that's where pain and suffering and anguish and disease and ultimately death, those all rested in the body. And so the Gnostic project was to claim that things that were spiritual or transcendent in that sense, that those were the good things, and the material things like your body and even procreation to some extent were bad. And so there was this constant pulling of one away from the other. And although I'm not purporting that this is the same thing, but I do see a kind of echo of Gnosticism in that dualism that many people seem to be exhibiting today without realizing where that might be coming from. So that's my take on your thought. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I didn't see that parallel. There certainly is a lot of Gnosticism, at least a thread that runs through their thinking. I was just imagining, well, how would I talk to somebody like, I have never met anyone like that, you know, that's mm-hmm. that in deep in the gender ideology. But I was just wondering how to, you know, just theoretically or thought experiment, how to, you know, kind of approach that person mm-hmm. and dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I believe, David, that we need a whole, and I'm talking here as a Catholic, we need, not just in this country, but we certainly need it in this country, we need a new cadre of men and women, and they could be religious sisters, could be brothers, could be priests, lay people, who need to be properly trained and equipped on how to go into this mission field. This is a huge mission field now, unlike anything we've ever seen before. And we don't have to leave for a foreign country to go into this mission field. The people who are in this howling wilderness of confusion about their gender identity and about who they are as a sexual being, who they are as men and women, this goes beyond, you know, just the basic ignorant worldview of atheism. It extends to the whole idea of reality itself. And so I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'm glad you raised the issue, David, so I can spout a little bit on this. I really believe that bishops, seminaries, religious orders, and maybe some yet to be founded, need to come into existence so that men and women can be properly equipped to go into this digital mission field and speak the truth to these people who are wandering aimlessly, blindly, and reach them. Because now, I don't see too many people, if any, who are properly equipped to do that. So I'm glad you're raising this issue, because it's one of these things that we have to be thinking and group thinking about. Otherwise, we have lots of lost souls out there who will never hear the truth because nobody has learned how to speak it to them in a dialect that they can understand. And that's where I think all of this ultimately has to go if we're going to reach them. Anyway, David, thank you. I'm glad you were patient with my musings there.
No, thank you. I love that approach.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I really do. Let's go to John in Lodi, New Jersey. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Patrick. Patrick, I was listening to Dr. Ralph Martin, a podcast, a very recent one over the weekend. It was actually very somber, and it's proclaimed that he basically said that the cardinal, I think it's the cardinal from the Netherlands, who's in charge, and I don't remember the name, who's in charge of the synod in 2023. And he mentioned that all the bishops in Germany, all of the bishops in Germany agree that the homosexual teachings of the church are in error. And it seems they'd be in favor of changing those teachings. Pope Francis put the cardinal, I believe.
Give it to me in the form of a question, John, because we're getting short on time.
Okay, sure. So what would it take for something like that to happen? And can something like that happen?
Can something like what happen?
Like the changings, they'd be changing the teachings of the church regarding homosexual marriages, homosexual relations.
I get it. Okay, no. One has to remember that, and I'm sure you probably already know this, John, that is the teaching of Christ himself. Jesus himself pronounced on this issue. He didn't use terms like homosexual and heterosexual, but he defined God's plan for human sexuality in Matthew chapter 19, beginning in verse 1, where he said, "In the beginning, God created them male and female. And this is why a man leaves his parents and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder." So by way of defining the paradigm of one man and one woman in sexual union that leads to offspring, he excluded thereby all other permutations, two men, two women, five dudes and a chicken, any other combination is thereby excluded. So this is not so much the church's teaching, although it is, but the church is simply teaching what Jesus himself taught, what the apostles taught, what St. Paul, to use a premier example, taught on the issue, that when human sexuality is used in a way that is contrary to that paradigm that was established by God in the garden, then it's sinful. So whether it's fornication between two heterosexual people, or it's sodomy between two homosexual people, or some other perversion of what God has ordained, that is sexual sin. And the church can't change that. The church doesn't have the power to change that any more than the church could add a person to the Trinity because it thought maybe there should be another person in the Trinity, making it a quadrinity. The church doesn't have that ability. It'd be like trying to put out the sun with a squirt gun. It's impossible. You can't do it. So for that reason, people, you know, in synods or in bishops' conferences or wherever they may be, they can yammer on and on about how they think the church needs to change its teaching and get updated and get with the times and, you know, all that archaic patriarchal nonsense that we now know is not true. The church has to change its teachings. That's absolute rubbish. Not only will the church not change her teaching, the church can't change that teaching for the reasons aforementioned. So that's my take on that, John. I hope that's helpful. Let's go to Lisa now in Atlanta. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, Patrick and Cy.
Hi.
Actually, my question kind of plays off of John's, and it's okay. About the concept of sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful, and how it is being cited by some Catholics and even some prominent priests to justify changing some church teachings that can be difficult to live out and therefore unpopular, such as contraception and homosexual marriage, that type of thing. So my question is, was there ever an example of that sensus fidelium having an impact on changing an established church teaching? You can't undo truth.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the point of the...
The answer is no. Yeah, the answer is no. People can reject it. They can revolt against the truth. They can hate it. They can revile it. They can preach against it. They can get other people to follow them. But it doesn't change the truth of the gospel. It is what it is. And although some people will deny it, the church, for her part, can't deny it. The church is protected from that by Christ, from ever violating the truth. So you may see people along the way who will do that, but it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. The sensus fidelium, and I'm glad you raised that question, because that Latin phrase, sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful, it refers to actually the opposite, and that is the faithful, the lay faithful, that's you and me, the non-priests in the church, and we're by far the vast majority. The sensus fidelium, authentically understood, it refers to the faithful maintaining of the truth of the gospel among lay people, even when popes and cardinals and bishops and priests go off the rails, as has happened in the history of the church, the sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful in knowing sort of instinctively that there are certain things that are true regardless of what may be said about them, and they maintain the integrity of the faith through the sensus fidelium. An example of that historically would be during the Arian crisis in the 3rd and 4th century, at the time of St. Athanasius, for example, who was smack in the middle of the 3rd century. And he was one of the few bishops who remained faithful to the Orthodox teaching, the Orthodox Catholic teaching of the divinity of Christ, his godhood. And many bishops and countless priests and deacons went into heresy and they became Arians formally. And yet the vast majority of lay people didn't go along with that, because the sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful, that sort of internal guidance system, that homing beacon, if we want to use that terminology, it made them realize, no, that's wrong. And I don't even necessarily know why it's wrong. I don't even know if I can explain why it's wrong, but I know that's wrong to say that Jesus is not God. There's something about that I know that's not right. And so that sensus fidelium clung, you know, fiercely to the truth. And ultimately, and this is something that St. Athanasius actually adverts to, it was the faith of the lay people, their sensus fidelium, that helped carry the church through those very perilous times when so many in the clergy had toppled over into heresy. That's what the sensus fidelium actually means. It does not mean, has never meant, and I'm not saying this vehemently toward you, Lisa, I'm just saying it vehemently toward the kooks on Twitter and Facebook and the gadfly celebrity priests who pop up with nonsense on social media about sexual matters. That is the opposite of the sensus fidelium. Hey, let's get a whole bunch of lay people together and start saying that we need to change the church's teaching on X, Y, or Z. That's not the sensus fidelium. That's the opposite of the sensus fidelium. Does that make sense? Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yes. I've heard that explained, that the sensus fidelium is kind of the fruit of the teaching as opposed to the catalyst for a teaching. But then how can a priest or anyone say that, you know, we're almost upside down in Catholicism as far as the acceptance of, say, contraception? Like, you know, and so some would say, you know, because almost the majority of Catholics are pro-contraception.
Yeah.
How can
I understand the question. I have to take a break. I apologize, but it's not true for this reason. Let's say that every single person in the United States, without exception, believed that racism and slavery were okay. It wouldn't make it okay. It would still be evil. It would still be wrong. Even if everybody thought it was right, it would still be wrong. And the same is true when it comes to the gospel. You know, 1,000,001 people can say, let's change it. It doesn't change the fact that it's still true. Thanks, Lisa. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I make a habit of visiting churches, not just around the country, but all around the world, and praying for you. You personally, you and your intentions, your family situations, what have you. And over the years, occasionally I will post a picture of the church that I prayed at for you and your intentions. And I did so yesterday at the St. Turibius Chapel at the Pontifical College Josephinum. It's a large, beautiful, old seminary in Columbus, Ohio. And I have a connection there. I did a couple of degrees there back in the day. Now, I was not a seminarian there. I was married, raising a family, working full-time, and also doing my academics in around all that. So I have a connection with them. And I was there yesterday for a meeting, and so I spent some time in the chapel, and I prayed for you. So if you're interested in seeing this beautiful, glorious chapel, it's in the theologate, where the last 4 years of study are done before the priesthood. You can see a picture of it there. I posted that. And I just wanted you to know that I do make good on my promise on a daily basis to pray for you. And every so often when I can get into some church and I can pray for you and your family and your intentions, I do that as well. So please do keep me in your prayers. Let's go now to Connie listening in Pennsylvania. Hi, Connie.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is that my son in his 40s has been married twice outside the church. He was baptized Catholic, of course, and the first marriage ended in divorce, and then he remarried outside the church without an annulment or a dispensation.
Okay.
And my question is, how do I relate to him, or do I relate to him at all?
I think so. I mean, you're his mom. You love him.
Right. Well, we've had them over, and we've been to their house. And I don't know if that's wrong, if we should maybe see them on neutral ground, maybe not at our homes. I'm just really confused.
Mm-hmm. Well, I look at it this way. Your son and the woman he's living with now, his wife, or is it a girlfriend? I kind of lost track. He got married twice?
No, they were married the second time.
Okay, so he's married to her. Okay. And being a Catholic, he realizes at some level that he's objectively living in sin because he's not validly married to this woman. And chances are you've talked to him about this before and just bounces off like a ping pong ball, right? He doesn't really take that into account or really care about that. Is that right?
I basically told him, we went to the reception of the second wedding, and I basically told him I wish I hadn't done that. I haven't actually, I mean, he knows I'm unhappy with the marriage. I haven't gone into the details. I need to have a talk with him.
Okay. Well, why don't we start there? Because you asked me, how can you relate to him? I think this is, number one, your absolute right, indeed your duty as mom, to speak the truth in love to your son. Now, he's a grown man. He's making decisions on his own, which is how it should be. But that doesn't change the relationship that you have. You're still his mom. He's still your son. You still have, as your husband does, you still have that right and also a duty to do what you can to help him see the truth and encourage him to live according to that truth. Now, I know it's easier said than done, but I would do it. And I would find a way to say, you know, the reason that I said to you when we were at your wedding reception that I'm unhappy with this is because before God, you're not married. And this situation could be rectified. It's possible that this could be rectified and you could get back into a right relationship with the Lord. You could have your marriage blessed. You could do the right thing, but that's going to require you being willing to acknowledge the plight that you're in. And without going into all the tedious details about the annulment process and all those things, the fact is there is a way open for him to get his life back on track in a sacramental and moral sense. He would have to be willing to do it. So perhaps, Connie, at the moment, maybe the most you can do is just at least say, you need to do that, son. You need to get your life back on track. You need to get this marriage situation sorted out, because eventually your life will end, as all of ours will, and you will be asked to account for your life. And Jesus said to follow me, to be my disciple, to go where I'm going, and to follow those things that I teach and that I've told the apostles, the church, to teach. And I want you to be happy in heaven forever. And the path that you're on right now is not going to take you there. So he may, oh, mom, come on. Or, you know, he may get mad. He may get defensive. But you should at least make the effort to do that in your own words and then see what happens. And maybe there will be a breakthrough. Maybe it won't happen all at once. Maybe it will require other people and their voices. It's not that you're going to gang up on him or anything, but maybe little by little he will begin to start thinking about the situation that he's in. And of course, if you're coming at him from the perspective of love and compassion, I love you. There's nothing you can do that will change how much I love you. You're my son. I will always love you. And by the way, because I love you so much, I'll always tell you the truth. Even if it involves suffering for me to tell you the truth, I will always tell you the truth because I love you. I mean, that message, love and compassion, has to be front and center, I do believe. But that may be exactly the key that will unlock this locked door of his heart or his mind. I have been known to be outlandish in my advice at times when I recommend that people get a hold of that book called The Dogma of Hell. And I know it sounds crazy. Like, how, I mean, talk about a one-way ticket to offending somebody. I know it sounds crazy. It's very counterintuitive. But the whole gist of it is give the little book, you know, let's say you get nowhere and he just blows you off and I don't want to talk about it. And, you know, what do you have to lose from handing him this little book with a garish red cover, The Dogma of Hell, in which it lays out what did Jesus say about hell? What does the Bible say about hell? What does divine revelation tell us about hell and the reality that there are people who go there? And of course, the implicit message is, you don't necessarily have to say this, it's kind of gutsy, but as long as you're on your way to hell, you might as well at least know a little bit about what it's going to be like when you get there. Now, I'm not saying that you would tell him that, but I think that's the subtext if he were to start going through this book and realizing, you know, I've got a real problem on my hands. And eventually my life will end and I don't want to go to hell. So what steps do I need to take to avoid that happening? I know it's a crazy, outlandish, counterintuitive thought, but I've seen it work before. I really have. So that's another thing to think about.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I need to have a chat with him.
Yeah. And, you know, God will bless you. Ask the Lord for the special signal graces that you have a right to ask for because you're his mother. What a beautiful thing to think about it, that of all the who knows how many billions upon billions of people in human history, God chose you personally to be his mother. And therefore, you have incredible standing before the throne of God when it comes to invoking graces upon your own children. So make full use of that.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Connie. God bless you. Cyrus, do we still have the link to that book up on the show page? I don't remember.
Yes, there's and right now it seems to be linking to the Kindle version.
Okay.
But it's simple. Just go to, if you go to Amazon and just put in The Dogma of Hell, it pops up.
Okay, right. In fact, there is, I just checked the link. So if you go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, you'll see where it says links. So right below the Patrick Madrid Show, it says about links and contacts. So click on links and then you'll see The Dogma of Hell. And then you can see it. You see the cover right there. Looks like the Kindle edition, 99 cents. I thought I saw somebody say that the paperback might be out of print. Maybe not. I don't know. But you can get used copies online as well. We don't make any money off this, by the way. This is not like a Patrick Madrid Amazon connection. It was no benefit to me at all. No benefit to Relevant Radio at all. The benefit's going to be purely for yourself and the person who reads the book. But
yeah, I'm seeing it on here for $5.
For
a paperback. $5.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Peanuts.
Yep. And Audible is free if you sign up for Audible, you get a free book.
I have it on Audible. I have the book and I have the book on Audible. And every so often when I'm just barreling down the highway, I'll listen to Audible books, including that one. Well worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Cyrus. I appreciate that. So not to put too fine a point on it, everybody, but I think it does bear repeating from time to time. If you've tried everything and that person in your life is just, for whatever reason, they're just not willing to listen, and you see this headlong, you know, heading down that wide and well-traveled road that leads to perdition that Jesus talked about, and you've tried everything and you've pulled your hair out and you don't know what else to say or do, again, I know it sounds crazy, but it's the weirdest thing. It is the weirdest thing. You give somebody a copy of this book. Happy birthday. Here's a book about hell. What?
Gee, thanks, Patrick.
I've had that very reaction from people. They give you a funny look like, what? What does this mean?
Come on, man.
And I've even said, Cyrus, you know, if you're going to go to hell, you might as well at least know what it's going to be like. I know it sounds so insane, but it's like I've seen it happen, and people get turned around like when all else fails. So anyway, that's all I have to say about that. And again, to underscore, I'm not trying to sell anyone a book. There's no benefit to me at all, other than having the satisfaction of knowing that I gave you some advice that has worked for me before. So anyway, how's that
for
a happy
ending? That's all I have to say about that.
How's that for a happy ending?
I'll take it.
All right. Perfect timing, too, because we're going to take a break. Before we do, though, I just want to remind you about Father Rocky's brand new Lenten Reflections that are video-based. They're all new. You've not seen them before. We had just a tremendous outpouring of enthusiasm for last year's Lenten Reflections that he did, that he decided to do a whole new batch. And you will be receiving them at your email address every single day, starting on Ash Wednesday all the way through Easter Sunday, when you go to relevantradio.com/Lent and just tell us what email address to send it to. That's it, free, no strings attached. And it will make your Lent and your appreciation for the Holy Mass and the love for Jesus that you have in your heart that much stronger. So what have you got to lose? Go to relevantradio.com/Lent and plug that in, and it's all yours starting Ash Wednesday. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored in part by St. Gregory Recovery Center. More information about their Catholic-centered recovery from substance abuse is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Carol now in Arizona. Hi, Carol.
Hi. How are you, Patrick?
I am well, thanks.
Good. My question is about the validity of my marriage and how to find out. So really quickly, background. Okay. My husband was baptized Catholic, but non-practicing when we got married.
Okay.
And he was previously married. And his wife was also baptized Catholic, but non-practicing.
Okay.
They got pregnant, and while not sure about their relationship, they tried to do the right thing and marry. But they only married civilly.
Okay.
They may have had a small ceremony in a park or something like that. I was not previously married, and I'm a cradle Catholic, mm-hmm. Baptist confirmed, but I was also non-practicing at the time of my marriage. I mean, I was practicing, but just kind of not like I am now, I guess.
Okay, right.
But so really at the time, and I was, a lot younger, just 19 years ago, my mother really took the wheel of our marriage and arranged it and planned everything with our local Catholic parish, and
mm-hmm.
we did go through the marriage prep classes and talked with the priest, and I vaguely remember talking to the priest about my husband's previous marriage and his child and everything,
mm-hmm.
But nothing else. Neither of us remember if and how his previous marriage was annulled, or would it have had to be annulled, because they did actually marry us in the Catholic Church. That was almost
right.
19 years ago, and we're still married, but how do you go about finding out, like...
Good question.
Or is there anything I have anything to worry about? I just, after hearing your show for a few weeks, I've just had like these doubts and questions about, because he actually married another Catholic baptized person before me.
Right. It's a very important question you're asking, Carol, and I admire you for being willing to sort of go where the truth leads. There is every indication, because they did not get married according to the church's canonical form, that it's an invalid marriage. And I think that's the very, very likely the determination the church would come to. But let me just read to you what a canon lawyer says on this question, okay? And I think rather than try to paraphrase it, it would be easier for me to just share with you what he said.
Okay.
So this is in response to a question about, like, what about a marriage that, quote-unquote, doesn't count? And that might be how some people would look at it. And they'd say, well, that first marriage, that didn't really count because they were just married by the justice of the peace. and they weren't practicing their faith. What about a situation like that? So here's his answer. By the way, it's Edward Peters is the canon lawyer, and this is a book on divorce, remarriage, annulments, etc. So he says, as the phrase usually crops up in tribunal practice, it is a seriously misleading conclusion derived from some otherwise correct canonical principles. In brief, there is no such thing as a marriage that quote-unquote doesn't count. Some examples might help. Example number one, a Catholic teenager bound by canonical form, and that is the church's requirement that you get married in the church, Catholic teenager bound by canonical form runs off to Las Vegas and marries before a justice of the peace. A few weeks later, the couple splits up and they get a civil divorce. Several years later, though, this Catholic wishes to marry in the church. That example, by the way, Carol, is not that dissimilar from the one that you just described. His second example is a Catholic free to marry attempts in good faith to marry someone whom, unbeknownst to the Catholic, is already validly married. The truth gets out and a civil divorce follows quickly. Later, this Catholic wishes to marry validly. Both of these earlier attempts at marriage are so obviously likely to be null that they would probably qualify for what canon law calls a documentary process. This is a process that can result in an annulment without the necessity of a full tribunal trial. Here, though, he says, is where this mistake can occur. Now, the mistake is to say, well, that marriage didn't really count, therefore we'll just ignore it. He says, here's where that mistake occurs. Recognizing the hollowness of the first attempt at marriage, that again was the example where you have a young Catholic, he has the obligation to get married according to the church's canonical form. He doesn't, he elopes, they get married before a justice of the peace, and eventually they wind up getting divorced. He says, even though that first attempt at marriage was hollow, you might be tempted to treat it as a marriage that did not count and simply not report it to the minister or the tribunal. Or, and I'm going to insert my own comment here, it may be that that's what happened with the deacon or the priest when you got married. Maybe the deacon or priest said, ah, that didn't really count. And so they just sort of ignored it. And what he's saying is that's a real problem for this reason. He says, maybe this information is withheld out of embarrassment or to save time or to spare the new intended spouse of ever knowing of the potentially painful past. But these are not reasons for non-disclosure. They are excuses and can be a recipe for disaster. First, not every quote-unquote open and shut case qualifies for the quicker documentary procedure. Only the tribunal can make that determination. Second, not every nullity case, whether documentary or formal, and by formal he's referring to the entire process of investigation that would involve questionnaires, etc., and affidavits. He says only a church court can make that determination. Third, every relationship, including an invalid marriage, leaves its mark on a person. Sometimes, moreover, the factors that led to an earlier invalid attempt at marriage might still be at work in the person. These factors should, maybe even must, be addressed before potentially repeating the same kinds of mistakes. This growth process, however, cannot be initiated if it remains hidden in the past. So, for these and other reasons, canon law forbids a second marriage before the validity of the first marriage is officially established. The invalidity, rather, of the first marriage is officially established. And he cites canon law, canon 1085. He says, please note that, strictly speaking, canon 1085, if violated, does not doom the second marriage to invalidity. Nevertheless, persons considering marriage under these circumstances, or perhaps persons already married thereunder, and that would describe you and your husband, should not hesitate to discuss the facts honestly with the priest or canon lawyer, and thereby receive advice on how to address these matters correctly. So as for your personal circumstances, Carol, seems to me that his description here would apply to you. And the really interesting subtlety here is he's saying that even though it's very likely that that first marriage that your husband had would be very quickly deemed to be invalid, in which case mm-hmm. it would leave him free and you free to get married, his point there is that even though that's the case, the factors that contributed to that being an invalid marriage might still be present. That's why, in order for the church to determine the invalidity or validity of that first marriage, it would have a direct effect on the marriage that you're in now. because it could be that what the church finds, like, oh, here's why the marriage was invalid, and that issue may still be part of your husband's, you know, it may still be true of him in some way. And that, of course, would make the current marriage invalid. So the best way to go about it, and this is why I'm so glad that you're, you know, willing to sort of pursue this, would be sit down with your parish priest and say, we've just recently become aware that there's more to this story than we realized. We want to do the right thing. We want to find out if our marriage, you know, what needs to be done to make sure that the marriage that we're in now is valid in the eyes of God and the church. And your parish priest will help you. And I suspect it will involve submitting the paperwork to find out if his first marriage was valid. And then once you have that decision, and I'm guessing the likelihood is very, very high, that the church will declare nullity, and it will declare that that marriage was null from the beginning. In which case, then, you can have your marriage convalidated and never have to worry or wonder again.
Yeah. Now, because we're, like, we moved and, you know, our parish is in a different place, but is there a way to, like, how would I go about, can I contact my parish where we got married and ask them to, like, is that something, like, the process they went through to let's say, decide that it was invalid, even if it was just, like, in a rush manner, like you said?
Yeah.
Like, is there documentation that we can request about that? Like, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, I would, you know,
don't
for
be
me.
Embarrassed.
But, I mean, you know, I'm sure they have a record of our, because I actually looked, I have our civil, you know, a certificate of marriage, but not the church certificate. I probably have it somewhere, but I couldn't find it. So I actually called and requested it, and they were going to mail it to me. So I know they have that, but they would, I was a little bit embarrassed to ask about his previous marriage and how that was dealt with. And I kind of also was embarrassed because I didn't remember.
Oh, don't feel bad. And I know it's,
I should
so
remember. Or, and my husband too, like, he doesn't really remember. We were young and my mother kind of took the wheel, and I don't know really how they dealt with that. And I mean, they did marry us. Mm-hmm. And
here's my advice.
Yeah.
It very well could be that, unbeknownst to you, that the paperwork was filed for annulment for your husband without even him necessarily knowing, although that seems highly unlikely. But it is possible that this was done in the way it should have been done, and that documentary decision that he referred to there, where it can be very quickly determined without the whole process going on, that this documentary process could have resulted in the marriage tribunal saying, yeah, that was an invalid marriage. That's all you need to do. They can go ahead and get married. That may have happened. And if the priest is still alive who married you, assuming it was a priest, it could have been a deacon, I suppose, there would be some, or there should be some notes that would reflect that in the file or in the parish's files. It's also possible that that was neglected, and either out of negligence or ignorance or for whatever reason, it could be the deacon or the priest just never bothered to do that. That's where there would be a real problem. So you're right to say, I need to get the paperwork. Please send me whatever you have. And then when you sit down with your parish priest and explain the situation to him, and say that you'd like to initiate this process so that your husband can know one way or the other about that first marriage.
Right. Okay.
Then you know what to do next. Then the next steps become very clear. But I think that is the very next step to take at this point.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate all that information. Thank you very much.
And be at peace, because the Lord knows that you are doing everything you can to do things the right way. He knows that you're sincere. You've been acting in good faith. You haven't been trying to cut corners. He knows that. And he will bless you for seeking the truth. Remember what Jesus said, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. I heard somebody just say that they can't find the book, The Dogma of Hell, at relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let me show you how to do it. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. I'm looking at it right now. just below the big white words that say The Patrick Madrid Show, click on the blue button that says links. Just click on it. It's going to open up another window, and you're going to see right there where it says The Dogma of Hell. Second from the bottom. Click it.
You can do it!
That's right. And look, boom, there it is. Right there. And it's there. Just follow those steps. Patrick Madrid, I'm sorry, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on the blue button that says links. Click on the link for The Dogma of Hell, and there it is. Easy peasy.
Excellent.
Easy peasy, right, Cyrus?
That's right.
All right. In fact, we are too close.
You are
100%.
Right.
Talk about a man who has to know his limitations.
I clearly don't know mine.
No, I think you do. I just don't see.
You don't have time. Music's about playing.
Music's about to start. Yeah. I'm just pushing the envelope here.
Man's got to know his limitations.
Would it be prudent for me to do it now?
Come on, man.
All right. If you put it that way. All right. Well, I have another hour yet to share with you, and we will do that right after this quick timeout. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Like, I'm sorry to break it to you, Chad.